racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick. Sirius XM Sports presents...
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
3 and horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who are paid with Horsebills.com. Dozen hours of work in minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews, taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Well, we're back, and that was a simple as a Wi-Fi drop. You know, I mentioned the other day, we got this latest equipment, and it's very cool. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I can basically take it anywhere. It's got battery capability, 6 hours of battery life, so don't even have to be connected to wall unit. But you need the Wi-Fi. So it's got two different antennas, so it's always reaching, for the various signals. And you're, of course, somewhat at the mercy, too, of of the occasional, Wi-Fi elements. And actually, so far, I think, what did we have, Case? Maybe on Monday, I think we had a drop, but I think it was during a break. Anyway, I was wrapping up with Jess, so thanks to Jessica Martini, and we looked to day two of the sale. Got a couple more couple more hips to consider. It's going to be very tough. People are paying premiums clearly for bloodstock. That part of it is very evident, and it you know at whatever level, not just at the $2.3 million, not just at that level. Like I said, 50%, the one that we were looking at, basically sold at about 50% above what, you know, I considered our budget. You know, so if you think to yourself, all right, we're going to set a budget of $50,000, you got to make a mental decision or, you know, a consideration of up to 75, probably. I mean, that's what this market is right now. So makes it challenging. And it's funny because I was talking to Aaron Yagoda, and Aaron, we were weighing the budget considerations. And actually, this will segue me to I want to get some thank yous in from yesterday, but you know, Aaron said, why not just go ahead and claim? I mean, if you've got that budget, let's say $40,000, $50,000, well, why not, you know, comb the claiming ranks? And my personal mentality on that. I mean, we've done some claiming, obviously, over the years, but I don't know. I always get the sense that in general, when you've got like a group of partners, that a young horse, you know, some people really love, particularly having, you know, a 2-year-old, but, you know, starting a horse off at the beginning of their career, you know, there's a certain appeal to that. Others that are just want action, you know, there's that mentality too, that you want to claim one and you know, get instant action. So that, you know, that's a possibility. We haven't claimed one since, I think we've claimed one since Williams Lucky Gray, who was terrific. I mean, she ran, my God, she ran a bunch of times and won twice, and now she's in the show ring, so that, which is very cool. So it's depends on what, you know, if you're an individual, or if you're, you know, if you've got a group, depends on, you know, what everybody's collective interests are. And that gets me to last night. We went, got an invitation when I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, maybe now it's probably almost a month ago, that we were going to come to Sanibel. I got the nicest note from John Simato and an invitation to his restaurant, to Sip's Place, and so I said, absolutely, we'd love to come. And so got to meet John and his wife Catherine, and actually John's got his daughters working at Sip's, and met his partner Dave and his wife, oh my gosh, Anna. We had the nicest time. Can't thank John enough for the invitation, and we'll certainly be back. And I got to get John now to come to Saratoga. He's never been to Saratoga, never been to Derby, so I was pimping him on that. It's funny, a lot of the restaurants are They've got, you know, because the weather's so fabulous, they've got the outdoor seating and the, you know, the patios, and it's just so pleasant. I mean, it's such a treat. You know, we get such a limited window. That's why everybody, you know, in the Northeast, that's why we love, you know, the summer, and as soon as the weather gets decent, the opportunity to sit outside. But here, you know, it's every single day. You can, you know, unless a hurricane shows up. But we learned a whole bunch about the island, and found out actually that, in fact, I texted Brett Calhoun. Apparently, Brett Calhoun has got a place here. He's got a getaway. I don't know how often he gets to come, but yeah, the Calhouns have a Sanibel getaway. It's very different here. It's of all the different kind of, you know, tropical, subtropical settings that Tina and I have gone, and we really haven't done any island, Caribbean vacations or anything. But this is different. It's different from, I mean, the west coast of Florida is different anyway from the east coast. It's more relaxed and more casual and kind of laid back compared to Miami and Lauderdale and, you know, Palm Beach, etc. But this is its own, got its own entity and vibe really to it. So there's some things about that we've already encountered actually that Tina in fact brought up. When we were driving in on Friday night, it must have been about 9:30. It was about 9:30. We saw something cross the road in front of us, which looked like a big woolly dog. And Tina said, "It's a wolf." And I said, "A wolf? It couldn't be a wolf." But it turns out, apparently, it's coyotes. Apparently, there's coyotes that I don't know if they swam here before the bridge or somehow got on the ferry. But we hadn't even really arrived, and we saw something unique to Sanibel, and John and his wife they confirmed coyote, it's a coyote, and yesterday I ended up having to put it back in the ocean, but I found a starfish, and with all the times I've gone to beaches gathering shells, I've never found a starfish, and so we were trying to figure out. We had to watch it for a while, and then when it started to move, we realized, okay, we can't keep this. So we waited out, and we sent him on his way. It's been great. We got three more days, and then we got to head Saturday. We got to head toward Louisville, and the Derby fortnight, as we affectionately call it. So, I was hoping to get to Bill Gallo, and if you hadn't noticed, if you're a Steeplechase fan, a beautiful reworking of the website. Really nice. And completely new, refreshed, nationalsteeplechase.com. And tomorrow when we talk to Joe or Sean, who's due? I think we talked to Sean not last week, the week before, so it might be Joe's turn or Tom Law's. But there's a couple of different Chase stops this weekend on Saturday, and those fields are set. the Grand National, the Big Timber event at Butler, and the Temple Gwathmey. We got the Grade 3, actually Grade 2, Temple Gwathmey at Middleburg on Saturday. Five-horse field, including Snap Decision and Moscato for Jack Fisher. Leslie Young's got Redisian. Kerry Brian's got Iranistan. And Cyril Murphy has got Mr. Naylor's Amschel. Five-horse field for the Temple Gwathmey. And a nice eight-race card at Middleburg on Saturday. Got some maiden action. Got some timber there, too. You got the Middleburg Hunt Cup. On Saturday, and the Glenwood got a training race on the flat as some of the horses get ready for the middle part of the year as the action reaches the Northeast. So we'll talk, we'll put that away, and we'll talk to, don't have PPs yet, just the overnight. So that's a note that Tina handed me. she can't be doing this. She wrote a note on the back of a piece of news. I saw the other day in the Asbury Park Press, and then Bill Finley reworked the piece. You know, the jockey crop rules are going to have a national approach in July as part of HISA. So Monmouth is essentially petitioning the New Jersey Commission to amend the rules that basically rendered the stick moot at Monmouth last year, to the consternation of jocks, obviously, and to players. I mean, it was unusual to watch, obviously, and a lot of people had no interest, quite frankly, in betting it. And you would think that the national approach, and Dennis Drazen is quoted as saying that they think they've got a very good chance of, you know, getting the commission to do this. And so they would start the meet, which is, you know, not far off. They could basically start with these rules as opposed to, you know, going a couple of months with no stick and then changing over to the new rules. The HISA rule allows riders 6 uses of the crop and no more than 2 in succession. So basically 1-2, wait for a reaction, get a reaction, another 1 or 2 if need be, etc. That would certainly be compared to what the jocks had to deal with at Monmouth this past season. That would be an improvement. So keep an eye on that. I hope the commission will understand what is, you know, being suggested to them. So all right, close it. Actually, we won't. Yeah, Case. We won't need a break, obviously, because we had the little Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi drop, so we might as well stay, and might as well bring Sid in rather than launch into anything else. All right, yeah, let's do that. Because actually, we got quite a bit to cover with Sid, as promised. All right, and I will save some of the Indiana discussion for later. Gus is going to join us at the end of the show. He's done the pick 5 at Keeneland, so we'll get that from him. I suppose that there's a good chance That's probably a good chance that Seth Merrow, who we'll talk to, probably a good chance that Seth has looked at some Keeneland as well, I would imagine. And there's only one two-year-old race there today. It's going as the fourth. And this is the race that came up with Wesley on Monday, the where he's got the horse that he bred, Taster for the King, as well as Talkin' Pharaoh. And as I, as mentioned, you've got Baytown Get It On coming back for Paul McEntee after running second in that first race of the year, of the two-year-old season at Keeneland. And then in terms of first croppers, Motown, the actually that Baytown Get It On is a Motown, so he's already got his first winner. And you've got Sergeant Counselor for William Walden. This is his first starter, and so best of luck to the young Walden getting his training career going. Free Drop Billy, John Enos, has got Bourbon Therapy as well. So there's your first. There's a there is a Sharp Azteca, but it's he's on the AEs. He's second on the AE list. So big field too. I was a little surprised actually. I didn't realize they were you know, allowing this many in the gate. With the two-year-olds, you know, a lot of places have limited the field size. Here, you're going to get 12 in the gate. So, all right, I think I hear Sid.
Hey, how are you, Steve?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm actually. It just occurs to me. I'm really not that far from you. I'm down at Sanibel.
You're kidding.
No. We're here for the week.
Oh, wow. That's great, man.
Yeah. So we did pass Tampa on the way Friday night. I stopped in Ocala as well on the way down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Nice break, huh?
Yeah, well, it's Tina. It's her break, and considering that I disappeared for 5 weeks, I could not say I couldn't come up with any kind of. no excuse was going to be feasible for trying to, yeah. For the, and why would I want to? I mean, possible complaint can I have being here leading into the two intense weeks at Kentucky? We'll talk about the Derby in a minute. Any early impressions from the sale yesterday? Did you take anything away?
Nothing. That, you know, hasn't been reported, really.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Jessica Martini in the last hour about, particularly about the $2.3 million Uncle Mo that could very well stand up as, might end up being the sale topper. All right, then, Sid, let's utilize the time together to look at a couple of horses. I said earlier this morning that I thought it'd be worthwhile to maybe touch on some of the more esoteric Derby horses, and that includes, you know, the two international participants that won their way in. Summer is tomorrow, the runner-up in the UAE Derby, this being a summer front colt that was Brary Jones. We've touched on him a little bit, but then there's the Japanese participant who's getting a lot of coverage. You know, the early arrival of Crown Pride at Churchill, and always the interesting training process that the Japanese horsemen, you know, seem to bring with them. And this is a pedigree that, you know, nobody's going to be, you know, rank and file players aren't going to be that familiar with Reach the Crown and some of the bloodline that put this horse together.
Well, this horse, first off, we have to, it's expected that you've got to look at Japanese horses carefully now after what's transpired in all the international meets recently, right? I mean, in Dubai, Breeders' Cup, it's pretty amazing what the Japanese have been able to do shipping over, and it's all like coming together in a big, big chunk. And so this horse, is going to get the attendant examination just based on what's been happening. And you can't just out of hand dismiss the Japanese anymore. Even on dirt, obviously, after what we saw at these recent meets. Having said that, this horse does have an interesting pedigree, Steve. And for listeners out there, if you look at, as you pointed out, his sire has Reached the Crown. He's a grandson of Sunday Silence. And he's out of a King Kamehameha mare, and that means pride. What's interesting about this pedigree is, first off, it's a great cross with Sunday Silence and King Kamehameha. That's turning into a really great Nick cross both ways, actually, in Japan. The second thing you come across is that this horse is inbred to Sunday Silence 3x4, which is also starting to happen more and more because there are so many Sunday Silence line stallions there, and mares from those stallions are, crossing back with stallions that have Sunday Silence in them. So it's just inevitable that's going to happen. The next part of this equation is that in Japan, you have Shaddai, which is the big stallion station. But you also have smaller farms that are based around Shaddai, the stallion station, that are owned by, notably, Terry Yoshida, the eldest brother, and Katsumi Yoshida, the middle brother. Now, Katsumi's operation is Northern Farm, and he's had a ton of success internationally, and it's almost like it's become the bigger player. Terry Yoshida has Shaddai Farm, which is separate from the Shaddai Stallion Station. I bring this up just to explain that all the brothers' stallions that they own together stand at the Shaddai Stallion Station, but they have their own individual farms. And Crown Pride happens to come from Shaddai Farm of Terry Yoshida. And this is a really interesting pedigree because it goes back five generations to a mare that their father, Zenya Yoshida, purchased named Gray Quill. Now, Zenya Yoshida had a stud farm in Kentucky at the time called Fontainebleau. And through that farm, he purchased Gray Quill, and that family, the mare was sent to Japan. It's a great family of, it goes back to Quill, the mare Quill. And Gray Quill in this particular family is Crown Pride's one, two, three, fifth dance. So it's all Shaddai bred all the way back, and those are all Japanese mares. Ever since that mare Gray Quill was imported to Japan. She's been bred to their stallions there. And this horse, Crown Pride, is the product of six generations of Shaddai breeding. And so that's a really interesting aspect to this horse, because a lot of times you'll find the Japanese horses have a recent American or European bred dam, first, second, third dam, but this goes all the way back to, like, you know, the sixth dam, or in this, no, the fifth dam was the imported mare here. And so that's really another interesting facet to this pedigree. There's a lot of stamina in this pedigree, you know, for anybody wanting to take a shot on this horse, I think, you know, you have to be legitimately interested in this horse based on, you know, what the Japanese are able to produce, particularly at 10 furlongs and more.
Yeah, the presence of King Kamehameha, who I know, I mean, you've touched on, but Dick Powell, too. And by the way, everybody, Dick got out of the hospital yesterday and is home recouping. So the good news is he's out of the hospital. We might be able to talk to him. I hope we can talk to him Friday ahead of the Champions Day card at Sha-Tin. But he's talked about King Kamehameha over the years as well. There's a lot of things in here. Dancing Brave, who got white muzzle, and is the broodmare sire of Hemisphere, the third dam. Seattle Slough's presence, obviously, as mentioned, and the Sunday Silence, top and bottom in breeding. It's funny how it's got a very familiar North American bend, but yet it's you know, so clearly stamped with Japanese, going back to, you know, that fourth mare that was that gray eminence that you mentioned. So it's pretty interesting, and there's people that are going to be intrigued every year, Sid. You know, horses like this, you know, that are showing up in the Derby, their record has been kind of maddening, to say the least. But there's people who, are of a belief that at some point, one of these, it's going to work somewhere along the line.
That's true. And, you know, if there's ever a year for it to happen, this could be the year. Now, like I said, you know, this horse is arriving after this tremendous Japanese display over the last 6 months, from the Breeders' Cup through the Dubai meet, through the Saudi meet. It almost lends a different weight to this horse than the prior Japanese invaders and stuff. And, you know, don't forget, you had a Japanese mare win the Breeders' Cup Distaff on dirt. You know, I think we're coming to a different level of viewing the Japanese on dirt. And I think that's something that, you know, you have to pay attention to now going forward.
Yeah, there's also, of course, coming out of Dubai, out of the UAE Derby, that is a consideration is, you know, the other horses with the Louisiana Derby runners that all went a mile and 3/16, which, you know, it's not,
right.
It's that, you know, halfway between 9 and 10 furlongs, but still, it you know, it's that much further than most of the prep exiters have gone.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've talked about the fact that, you know, the advent of the Louisiana Derby at a mile and 3/16, and it started with this Dubai UAE Derby over there. You know, as the distances have gone up and gotten closer to Derby distance, you know, I think it's it's another trend that's going to take place, Steve, in the preparation of potential Derby horses. I mean, we're living through some changes that are taking place right now, in other words. And, well, the other horse you mentioned, of course, is Summer of Tomorrow, was bred by Brary Jones, by Summer Front. And Summer Front, of course, a Warfront horse. The deal with him is that he actually comes from a pretty good family, just like we mentioned with the Japanese horse Crown Pride, that, you know, it's cultivation of Shaddai and Yoshida, Terry Yoshida, and his father, Zenya Yoshida, that led to that pedigree. When you take a look at this mare, this horse, Summer's Tomorrow, it's very obvious it's Phipps family breeding, right? I mean, the fourth dam is Blighty.
Yep.
The third dam is Dancing All Night, won the Long Island handicap, you know. And half-sister to Fantastic Fine, and it's a great family. And then the second dam, Glory Dancer, produced Bigger Picture, a horse that won the United Nations Grade 1 race at a mile and 3/8. So there's that great hip stamina on the bottom side of his family already, and it's not surprising that this Summer Front horse, Summer's Tomorrow, appreciates distance and his pedigree, and he's got a lot of class in that female line.
And I'm just looking at it, and you mentioned Blighty, of course. You get Reva Ridge there out of Lady Pitt, and the Nijinsky mare, Dancing All Night, Honor and Glory mare, Glory Dancer, the second dam, and then Badge of Silver, who we don't see, you know, all that often, happens to be the sire of Always Tomorrow, Summerfront's dam, and... You know, the only repetition in this whole pedigree for five generations is Northern Dancer, Sid. What do you got, 4 by 5 by 5?
Yeah, and also the dam, Always Tomorrow by Badge of Silver, she's a full sister to Bigger Picture, the horse that won the United Nations at a mile and 3/8, actually set a new course record. So the dam is a full sister to a horse that won at a mile and 3/8 in course record time, right? And at one at a mile and a half, you know, I mean, there's a lot, that's a ton of stamina in there. And it's turf stamina, too, which is even more pronounced, as we always talk about. So this horse, you know, no question about it, he is a horse that's going to appreciate distance.
The question, and I suppose we got to delve into a little into Summer Front's, I suppose, into Summer Front's numbers, and you know how much.
Well, he's a miler, typical Warfront type of miler, gets mile and 16th type of horses, but what you have to add into the picture is he's now been grafted to a very strong female family that gets a lot of distance. And so that changes his profile from a normal sire of milers and a mile and 16th horses to in this case, he's getting a horse that can get more distance. And that's the case a lot of times when you breed a lot of stamina to a miler, you know, you increase that distance potential of that potential horse. And that appears, you know, it's just a matter of how good his Summer is Tomorrow. But it wouldn't be surprising to see this horse down the road. You know, he's bred really to do stuff on turf And I wouldn't be surprised to see this horse, you know, win a 10-furlong race on turf down the road.
And that's the question. And at the same time, you know, the campaign in Dubai, which was mostly going short, you know, had a parade of 6 and 7 furlong efforts before trying the mile and 3/16 in the UAE Derby, and you know, one try certainly credible. And obviously, you know, the couple of wins going short on dirt, going, he's got a win at 6 and a win at 7 on the main. So I sure feels like this is a dirt horse enough. This is he may be the biggest obscurity for people going in, I would imagine.
Yeah, and look, let's face it, the female family has a ton of dirt performers in it. The Phipps, a lot of those Phipps horses are real strong dirt horses. And, you know, if you go back in his family and you examine Dancing Spree, for example, he's from his family, you know, the third dam is full sister to Dancing Spree, who's by Nijinsky, an Epsom Derby winner, right? But Dancing Spree himself, and this shows you something about this family, was one of those odd horses that with a huge stamina pedigree was a sprinter, won the Carter handicap. So the fact that this horse can win at 6 furlongs, you know, in that company at least, but can win is not surprising, but there's latent strong stamina underlying it as well. And it's almost like you can do, you know, the family has shown it can produce sprinters with stamina horses, and it can produce stayers as well. And the Summer's Tomorrow has shown elements of both in his racing performances to date. But obviously his biggest performance was stretching out, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's worth, you know, I think it's... it's worth noting. It'll be interesting. Looking forward to seeing this horse in the flesh too. Summer is tomorrow. All right. So we got the two exiters coming out of Dubai. Let's touch on a couple of others that have made the field, and notably, Happy Jack worked his way in. This is a Calumet Oxbow homebred. And then there's Zozos, and I'm not going to completely guarantee that he becomes a bit of a, you know, a mojo horse, a little bit of a talking horse, but he's got my attention, even though he seems bred for middle distance. Let's start with Zozos, and then go to Robbie Jack. This is, you know, the Butzow's homebred out of the forestry mare, Papa's Forest, and a horse that, you know, that dueled with Epicenter and finished well. You know, for all the conversation about lightly raced derby horses, he's also going to be making only a fourth start on May 7th. So, to me, he fits the, you know, the outsider obscurity storyline.
He also fits the pattern of the other two horses we mentioned, Crown Pride, Zenya Yoshida, and Terry Yoshida breeding of Shaddai. The other horse, the Summer's Tomorrow, with the Phipps breeding on the female line. This horse, Zozo's, comes from a Max Glock's Elmendorf breeding. And in fact, third dam is Barbara Sue by Big Spruce, a stakes winner. She's a half sister to Super May, a grade one winner. Hyde, she produced the Devona Dale stakes winner Diamond on the Run by Chris S. So it's a great Max Gluck Elmendorf family going back, and the second dam is by Dixieland Band, and the dam is by Forestry. Now, you know, people are probably wondering, with Munnings most notably noted for getting, you know, miler type horses, but Munnings has on occasion gotten horses that stayed farther, like I'm a Chatterbox. And he had a Del Mar Derby winner, Ohm. So I don't think you can, again, discount him altogether on the Munnings part, because Munnings has occasionally shown he can do that. And then you tie in, again, like I mentioned with Summer's Tomorrow, you've got this great Elmendorf staying family behind him as well. And if you're worried about Forestry and Dam, Forestry is also the broodmare sire of Derby winner Nyquist. So
that helps. You know, it's, that helps.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not the, you know, traditional reading of this pedigree might suggest, you know, you see Munnings out of a Forestry mare and you may discount the horse staying. But a closer examination shows that, you know, it's not out of the question.
What, you know, one thing that jumps out at me a little bit, Sid, given all of the conversations we've had the last few seasons leading into Derby, this is the maybe one of the first in my memory of late that has got Stormcat so prominent on the inbreeding, the 4x3. I haven't really seen much Stormcat like this in recent
Derby.
You know, classic seasons, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, for a long time, you know, a lot of Derby pedigrees and Derby winners did not have Stormcat at all, much less in breadth of them. You know, Stormcat wasn't appearing in Derby pedigrees, but now, with generational distance, he's starting to appear more prominently, and you know, it's only a matter of time before you start to see more of it too. That kind of happens. What was surprising for a very long time though was that the name Stormcat had not appeared in the Derby pedigree, I think, I want to say, until American Pharoah.
It was one of those things when he was still in his prime that, you know, that had become one of those Derby rules that you didn't want to see any Stormcat.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I see that you mentioned Big Spruce and the Maytai down there, the Barbara Sue, Dixieland Band. I love the way he looked on the racetrack today. Kevin Kirstein put up just a little snippet, and he was kind of pawing at the ground and kind of leaping. You know, whenever I see a horse leading into Derby that looks like it's ready to take flight, that if there were wings, they would pop up off the ground. That always catches my eye, and that's what Zozo's was exhibiting today. So I'm looking forward to getting a little bowl and seeing them.
And don't forget, he did, you know, like you mentioned, he did run that good second at a mile and 3/16. You know, that alone shows that he's on the more stamina side of a pedigree that would say Munnings out of a Forestry mare. You know, and by explaining this female family behind him, it makes some sense too.
Well, and he broke his maiden going short, and then immediately stretched right out and, you know, romped, actually, in that first time around two turns effort. He also notably, and this is kind of a esoteric element, this is a horse that, you know, has raced successfully at three different racetracks. Broke his maiden, or actually, I should say, just the two, Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. I thought for a second, that's in my eyes, I thought he had also raced at Churchill, but he's just training at, he's obviously training at Churchill. And actually, Cox had him at Keeneland, too. He did not race at two, and there might be, you know, there might be some of that, you know, that people still, you know, cling to, even with Justify. But Zozos, and there's some things to like, at least as a, you know, as an exotic candidate. All right, let's get our fourth one in, and this being Happy Jack, and Calumet represented. And is the beneficiary of the fever that that knocked out Doug O'Neill's other potential runner, and Happy Jack gets in, coming out of the Santa Anita Derby, and you know, only has a maiden win to his credit, but he's an Oxbow out of a Tappet mare. What can we say about Happy Jack?
It just so happens that these four horses we've talked about, there was a common theme of families developed by major breeders, Crown Pride, Yoshida's, Summer's Tomorrow, Phipps's, the horse we just discussed before this, Elmendorf, and we get the Happy Jack, and it's G. Watch Humphrey. If you look at the pedigree of this horse, is Shawnee Farm is responsible for quite a bit of the development. The second dam and the third dam are his, and he bred them from an imported mare, Tender Camilla, who is Happy Jack's fourth dam. So Calumet has purchased the dam by Tappet. What Calumet, Brad Kelly, has done through the years is he's bought a lot of AP Indy mares, and he's bought a lot of Tappet mares. And I'm not talking about expensive mares. Mares he's picked up, you know, fairly inexpensively at breeding stock sales, but he's hoarded them. And this one is by his stallion Oxbow out of Tapestry, a Tappet mare. And, of course, Oxbow, as everyone knows, is the sire of Hot Rod Charlie. And Tappet gives, you know, plenty of stamina. He's had several Belmont Stakes winners and horses that have run well in Derby as well. And, you know, the second dam here is by Ali Sheba. The third dam is by one of the great stamina influences, Vaguely Noble. And this mare, Noble Danceful, won the New York Handicap. So, as with all these four that we've discussed, Steve, there's a common theme of a lot of stamina on the female side, and a lot of cultivation by big-time breeders who know what they're doing. And so they come in with really good families that bring a lot of strength and depth, particularly for 10 furlongs into this race. And they're all outsiders, but, you know, it's one of these cases this year where if one of these four were to win, you just sort of go back and say, and damn it, look at all that stamina, and look at this, you know, combinations of speed and stamina too, but, you know, these great families behind them. And, you know, that's, on pedigree, they're not as huge outsiders as they are, on form. And some aren't that big on form either, but I'm just saying, you know.
Sure. And, you know, going back past Watts Humphrey, the presence of Shawnee Farm, including the sire of Tender Camilla, Prince Tenderfoot, which I don't recall seeing anywhere. I mean, that's a blueprint, a son of blueprints, Prince Quiella line, and I'm just curious about that part of this family. I mean,
that's G. Watts Humphrey.
All the way back at the beginning?
Yeah, because, you know, G. Watts Humphrey, Shawnee Farm, and Prince Tenderfoot was bred by Shawnee.
That wasn't a stallion that of you know any major import, right?
No,
I mean,
he did stand here, and you know, he was a Prince Quiella line stallion that you know is a footnote in history, but. You know, he was a black type winner, and he did stand in Kentucky.
Huh. I don't recall seeing the name.
No, it's a footnote. It's not
I like that.
Yeah, it's not a big farm, but it just shows you how, you know, breeders. You know, it's sort of like if you go back and you look at Mr. 50's horse, Perfect Soul, for example, wasn't a major stallion, but you can trace it, how he bred mares to him, because that was a stallion. If you look at Cheryl Spike's female family, and you look at Lady Cheryl, the mare that Mr. 50 bought to start that particular dynasty with, Lady Cheryl was by stallion called That's a Nice. Nobody knows who that was, but that was a big horse for his breeder, P. Noel Hickey, who stood That's a Nice and bred everything to him. And so, you know, what you end up getting is obscure stallions that were either regional stallions or almost private stallion sometimes. And in the case of Prince Tenderfoot, he was, I believe he was raced in Europe.
He won the Coventry.
I can't remember what he won, but...
The Coventry. He won the Coventry Stakes.
Oh, he did win the... Okay, yeah. So, you know, that... you know, so when you have a stallion like that that you've bred, you want to, you know, go back to a stallion like that. You know what I mean? Even if...
What's unusual is... that fourth dam, Sid, this Tender Camilla...
Mm-hmm.
...that was bred in Ireland...
Well, she was imported here.
Right. But, and it almost, what's unusual, it seems, is that there's like a generational skip here where Humphrey went back and went back into the family.
Well, went back to the sire, and then got, you know, went back, the horse, Tender Camilla, was bred in Ireland, and then he imported Tender Camilla over here. And,
right.
And then bred those two mares from her. And, of course, she was by the stallion he bred.
Exactly. There's a little interesting wrinkle here. That's what sort of confounded me when I was going through, because all of a sudden there's this Camilla that was bred by Mrs. Parker Poe in Ireland, but then there's got to be a story here from Watts that he went and added her to the broodmare band.
Yeah, because she was by stallion that was bred by Shawnee.
Exactly. It's just kind of a funny. It's like it picked up the story, picks up again, essentially, and that's where Noble Damsel came from.
Right.
Pretty cool. Yeah. All right. This is some of the twists and turns, and I am glad you brought in Mr. Fipke, because congratulations obviously are in order for Cheryl Spite's win.
Yeah, no, that was such a great win, and really pleased for him, and you know, as I referenced, that family comes from the good mare, Lady Cheryl, Illinois bred filly by That's the Night. Another footnote, you know, but that was all part of Noel Hickey's breeding. And, you know, Jack Work purchased that mare for Chuck, and he had a great run of success from that family, because the other Spite Stallion Grade 1 winner, Lady Spite Spear, is also from that family. By a different daughter, Lady Shakespeare, a different daughter of Lady Cheryl. Lady Cheryl had Perfect Cheryl, who won the Breeders' Cup and is the dam of Cheryl Spite. And Lady Cheryl had Lady Shakespeare, the Grade 2 winner, who's the dam of Grade 1 winner, Lady Spite Spear. And, of course, Lady Spite Spear and Cheryl Spite are both by Spite Stallion.
This has got Chuck's thumbprint all over it.
Yeah,
and that win, Sid, that win obviously is gonna earn Cheryl Spite, you know, a place in the operation, right? I mean, as a Spite Stallion.
So, he's gonna be a stallion for Mr. Fipke, no question about it. Yeah, this horse is very highly regarded from the very beginning. And then he, you know, it's all Roger Atfield. I don't know if you ever got a chance to, I sent you his number. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I tried to reach, we'll get Roger on without fail.
Yeah, my favorite. It's really his brilliance, because this horse is a real free-running horse early in his career, and Roger got him to relax. Roger worked with Emma Jane Wilson, and you know, a couple of these races I went to in Tampa this year, that was the change in Cheryl Spite, where they actually throttled him a bit early, got him to relax, and finish with the one run, which has turned out to be really the best thing for him, because now he does shut off behind horses and makes that big run. And, you know, which is what he did, obviously, in the Maker's Mile, too. But he'd done that in that Grade 3 at Tampa, where I was there for that race.
That's right.
And, yeah, and so it's a real change and real credit to Roger, because Roger will tell you all the descendants of Lady Cheryl are kind of difficult horses to handle mentally, and you know, they want their own way, And so he, because he's trained this family for so long, he's really thoroughly familiar with the idiosyncrasies of the family. You know, don't forget, this is a third generation G1 winner for Chuck. Sherrill's Fight.
Amazing.
Perfect Sherrill, Perfect Soul, and all three trained by Roger. So,
amazing.
You know, he knows his family inside out. And, of course, you know, the other side of it, too, with Lady Spike Spear, another grade one winner trained by Roger from the same family, too. So, you know, that's one of the benefits of a long-time home breeding program where, you know, you learn some of the idiosyncrasies of the family, the mental traits, the physical traits, and you have an owner breeder that, you know, he's not in a rush to send a horse to stud. And in Mr. 50's case, he doesn't syndicate his stallions anyway. That's why he has so many older horses running, because he'll give them time.
Well, and in Roger's in Roger Atfield's hands and in Roger's program, that you can see the kind of results. And this horse has been really cleverly brought into this 5-year-old season. It almost feels like the 4-year-old season, as you mentioned, where Atfield was working on him. It feels like, you know, there was all kinds of work put in with this campaign in mind, you know, with the back-to-back graded stake wins, the grade one achieved. You know, he's got the early success, rather than juvenile per se, but, you know, as a 3-year-old, it's almost as if the 4-year-old season was just kind of not worried about. That kind of shows you the patience you're hinting at.
Yeah, and also I've told Chuck, and Chuck will, I mean, he's memorized this whenever I'm about to say it, but I always tell him, you got to give the Spike Sounds time. And they get better as older horses. And that's my one lone mantra to Chuck. Give them time with the Spike Sounds, because they get better as they get older. And it's certainly the case with him. Now, he does want to run this horse on dirt, because he wants to. Apparently, this horse trained lights out on dirt. And he trained lights out on the sloppy track, too. And he just didn't like the Gulfstream surface. I know that Chuck would like to get, you know, to win a big race on dirt with this horse. I also know the people at Royal Ascot want this horse for the Queen Anne. So he will be nominated for the Queen Anne as well as the Met Mile. And he's also probably going to run back on Derby Day, because he came out of this race really, really feeling good. As did the filly who ran third in the Jenny Wiley after missing that break terribly. So both those fight stands are probably going to run back from what I was talking to Chuck about on Derby Day, because they came back really well. And, you know, they don't run on laces either. Even before that was, you know, mandatory, this horse wasn't a bleeder. So that's another really good, good thing about him.
Well, if he can augment the resume with some dirt success, that'll only add to the appeal. This was his first triple digit buyer, got a 103. I mean, which puts him in nice stead for the end of the for the end of the season when it comes to at least the Breeders' Cup Mile, which is going to be run on this course, Sid. I mean, what a luxury this win is for him at Keeneland, you know, to know that the sand-based course was to his liking.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot that can happen between now and then, but definitely I'm certain he's going to be making a start on dirt in a big race between now and then. Because Chuck wants that. Chuck wants to try him. And, you know, that's the beauty of being, your own guy that's not beholden to people that have brought breeding rights in a horse or that are going to syndicate the horse. You know, like I said, he owns everything outright, including every stallion he has. And he's not a guy that is partners with anybody on any horse. So the luxury for him is, on one hand, he'll give a horse a lot of time, and on the other hand, he'll also take daring chances with his horses too, which he can do because he doesn't have to answer to anybody else.
Sid, I'm curious because I'm looking at Lady Cheryl's not Lady Cheryl, but Perfect Cheryl's produce record, because I was curious what's on the ground. There happens to be this year already a Spitestown foal sister to Cheryl's Spite. There's also a More Than Ready yearling, and it's interesting, Sid, because the first two covers that Perfect Cheryl received were from More Than Ready, and neither of those were successful on the racetrack. Then she went to Spitestown 3 years in a row. She had a rough patch in 2019 and 2020. She had a red bag foal, and then you went back to More Than Ready. I mean, she's had a lot of success already with the Spitestowns, but it feels like you guys were compelled to try More Than Ready one more time.
Well, let me just, Chuck really, Chuck does his own mating, and he loved the female line of More Than Ready that goes with this mare quite a bit. And one of the reasons he went back to More Than Ready was I think it might be Ready and Perfect, a filly by More Than Ready. She didn't do much on the track, as you pointed out, but she just had a ton of talent as a when she was training. But she was a real head case, as I referenced with some
yeah.
of the horses. And
yeah.
the talent was so great that he felt compelled to try to go to go there. And of course, at that time, this horse hadn't come around, right?
Right.
And Ready and Perfect was, I want to say, if I can remember correctly, she had one workout where everybody was just incredulous because she just ran off. Now, she had four starts on the track, and she was in all four starts she was second or third.
Right.
But the thing about her was that she had a lot of idiosyncrasies, and one of them was that she hated to go into the gate, and she. You know, Roger was really trying to get her to relax, going to the gate. Finally, with that kind of talent, he just couldn't do anything. So Chuck finally sent her to Monty Roberts in California, who's really great at getting horses to
sure.
break out of the gate.
Sure.
And Monty was working with this filly and on Monty's facility there, and Monty clocked her. She was getting ready to run, and Monty clocked her, and Monty said that she ran the fastest 5 furlongs of any horse that he's ever had on that track. and he couldn't believe it, you know. But ultimately, even he could not get her to get into that gate.
Huh.
And so that's why but she had a world of talent, and so that's why More Than Ready, was a mate again.
Interesting. And it's also worth mentioning, she has not she has not produced. She hasn't had any Protus.
Let's see. She what happened with her? Don't forget, she was in training as a 5-year-old, so she wouldn't have been bred till she was 6 in 2021.
So, oh, okay. So she might be expecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, for those of you who are long range note keepers, you're looking for babies out of Ready and Perfect long term. It's going to be at least two, 3 years, but keep an eye out. This is worth tracking, and this is a long-term investment.
Yeah, that's the other great thing about a breeder like Chuck 50 is, you know, he's always breeding horses with the idea of what that horse's pedigree will be like when he breeds her back to another stallion, too. So he's a very long-range thinker that way. And, you know, that's another great, he's such a rare guy in the business these days, because there just aren't guys that hold on to every stallion outright that they own and breed and race and plan matings with, for the racetrack and not the sales ring. With a long range goal.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
You know, that's,
I mean, that actually has been, I'm glad we circled around to that, Sid, because it really kind of ends up being a theme of all the Derby, the four Derby horses we talked about. Those were the same kind of operations that, you know, that produced those female families.
That's right. Yeah. And this discussion almost tells you the way these guys think, right? Which is more long term.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, they'll put a horse to stud where people might not realize, you know, why that particular mare with a poor race record or unraced or two starts went to stud, right? And usually there's a reason for it. And I'll real quickly, Claiborne Farm had this mare Special, who was unraced, or maybe started once or twice. When Seth Hancock took over Claiborne, he kept Special. The reason was that she was a terrible bleeder, and she had incredible talent, really fast workouts, but she bled too much to race. So he kept her. And from her, of course, it's such a great family. She's the dam of Nureyev. And, you know, it's a gorgeous family. But, again, you know, it just shows you how sometimes these guys know what they're doing in terms of skipping a generation, in terms of racing, to breed for the next generation.
Well, and, that's also the family. That's the family of Blame too, right?
Yeah, Blame is from that family, and you know, of course, that's the family of Sadler as well, too.
There you go. Well, because here you go. Blame's dam was bound. Bound was it all. Yeah, and Tend. This is the that's right. The family of Tend, Limit, Archipenko. Wow.
I'm impressed you pulled that up so quickly.
Well, I mean, because she, you know, her name, Special's name, well known, but when I saw Bound, yeah. I knew immediately that was going to lead you to Blame. Sid, as always, it just amazing, and what I love about the randomness of our discussions. I mean, I did send you a text this morning at 8:30 or so. I said, let's talk about some of the more, you know, esoteric Derby participants. And it turns out that there's this you know, incredible, obvious commonality. And that, you know, that sort of reinforces a lot of the themes we discuss in breeding, you know, like we do.
Yeah, no, it always seems to tie together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's great. I love it. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you from Louisville next week, and we're going to start to, start to narrow focus and do what we do once we get to the Ville.
Yeah, and please send my best to Dick, too.
I will. Yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Right. There you go. I appreciate it. Another set of, you got it, another set of Derby runners examined. And you know what we're going to try to do, actually, is maybe pull together. This is a, I don't know why this never occurred to me before, but I'm going to try to pull together these files from, you know, during the course of the lead up. You know, the post prep conversations, and we'll try to put all of Sid's pedigree examinations of the other Derby runners. We'll put them all together in one place. All right, I'm going to work on that. All right, Case, let me suspend myself a note. Going to take a break here. We've got Bill Gallo. We finally nailed down Gallo. I want to get him in. Haven't talked to him yet this year. And with a big weekend coming on the Chase front, perfect chance to talk to Bill. Seth Merrow ahead as well. And we'll also get Gus in. I know I haven't put it up on the website yet, but I will. He looked at the Keeneland Pick 5. All right. So, some handicapping, the last portion of the morning. We're on Sound Silent Island for another couple of days after this. And then it's off to Louisville. We're getting there. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions, Ringrod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live it like a good boy oughta. And your mama takes a shot at the best son. Something different, all the girls have seen to like you. Cause you're handsome, like to talk and a whole lot of fun. But now your girl is gone and missing and your house has got an empty bed. About the wedding, they won't listen to a word you said. We're gonna take your mama out all night, yeah, we'll show her what it's all about. We'll get her jacked up on some cheap champagne, we'll let the good times all roll out. And if the music ain't good, well, it's just too
we're back. Hour three on this Wednesday, and gotta love a little of that, a little getting our music back on the show, and it's great to have Bill Gallo back. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Are we at Saratoga? I normally don't talk to you this time of year, but it's good to hear your voice, and I listen to your show all the time. Enjoy it immensely.
Well, Bill, I had to get to you because granted, I've got the services of the Clancy brothers and Tom Law rotating through on Thursdays, but with the launch of the revised nationalsteeplechase.com website and with things starting to, you know, really heat up, I wanted to get you in here. It's the Temple Gwathmi on Saturday, and you got the Grand National on the Timberfront as well at Butler, so I thought let's get Gallo in here.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you called. We're a month into the season. We're rolling along. We're, you know, coming out of COVID, and we're doing very well. We struggled there for, you know, certainly in 2020, and came back in 2021. But now we're really rocking and rolling. Off to a great start for the season. A lot of good things happening. And this is a big weekend. It's typically the Temple Gwathmi is a. It's a grade two stake. It's a launching pad for the Iroquois, which is a grade one, in the second week in May. So, well, you know, a lot of good things happening. Got a lot of horses in training. We've got a very stout summer schedule we just published, actually, with a bunch of races at Colonial and our Saratoga program is set. With one race every Wednesday at the meet for 7 weeks in a row, and then we're going to go to hopefully Belmont on opening day, or Belmont or Aqueduct. I'm not sure where it's going to be, but that's our NIRA commitment, which is great. And at the same time, we're going to be racing every Monday, two jump races every Monday at Colonial. And that schedule's up on our website. I'm glad you mentioned the website. We just launched it. It's we've gotten great reviews in the last 3 or 4 days. Very easy to move around. A lot of information there. We've got the video archives, things like that. So, you know, we're having a great season, and everybody's upbeat. A lot of our horsemen have kind of refueled now that we're out of COVID. A lot of new names. You'll see a lot of new names. Even the standings themselves. You'll see Leslie Young is clearly in front so far. And Kerry Breon is jumping at a bit and right on her heels. And Jack Fisher hasn't won a race yet, but that'll change Saturday for sure, because he's coming out strong in this Temple Gwathmi. He's got the two high weights and two exceptional horses, Snap Decision and Moscato. That ought to be fun to watch. And And then there's the Mean Queen watch. I'm in my Fair Hill office now, and if I look off into the horizon, she's, I think she worked today. I'm not positive, but I believe Breon was going to work her on the Tapeta at Fair Hill Training Center, and she's going to, I believe she's running Sunday in a point-to-point. That's a non-sanctioned race, and a flat race. She's going to tune up for the Iroquois. So she, the Mean Queen, looks like she's heading for the Iroquois on May 14th, and that should be really exciting because the horse is running at the, in the Guathmey here, prepping for that race. So it looks like another matchup between the Mean Queen and Snap Decision. Now you throw Moscato. He was the 2020 Eclipse champion out of the Fisher Barn. So there's a lot of good stuff happening. Really exciting racing. I've just had two inquiries this morning. Actually, two horses nominated to the Iroquois. Two foreign horses. One called Winter Fog from Emmett Mullins, who you might know. He's the trainer of the Grand National winner recently. And then Nikki Henderson actually nominated a horse called Pistol Whipped. So we're going to get some international flavor to the Iroquois, and they're going to have to take on the Mean Queen and Snap Decision and Moscato, and that ought to be one heck of a race.
Well, and you know, you mentioned I noted the overnights that came out for Saturday, and the field size obviously did step up from these first, you know, from some of the, you know, the Carolina and Georgia races that started the season. So you can really sense, and the weather, of course, I'm sure has kept some horses a little bit delayed, you know, getting rolling. But I can see that, you know, things are going to feed in. Here's this flat training race, too, with what, 11 in there that'll provide some horses going down the road.
Yeah, we weren't surprised by the smaller fields early in the season. It is early in the season. We had some winter setbacks on training and it inhibited a few trainers. Also, the shipping. Shipping, I will tell you, shipping is becoming an issue, the cost of shipping. So these meets now in the Mid-Atlantic region are much more accessible for the Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania trainers. We had some good racing, and more importantly, the race meets themselves in Aiken and Camden. And I just came back from Tryon, North Carolina, the Blockhouse races. They had record crowds, literally. Aiken went to a brand new course.
Nice.
It was phenomenal. It had a huge crowd of about 25,000. Carolina Cup had about 30,000, the biggest crowd they've had in years. We actually were down in Ocala, too, believe it or not. I went down there on March 5th and to the Florida Horse Park, and we put on we didn't do it, but it was a non-sanctioned meet. Former jockey Archie McCauley put it together, and it was very popular. It was a non-sanctioned race. We had a couple of hurdle races and a couple of flat races, and the people that were there, a lot of the key people in the business, we were all there, and it was pretty exciting, and it's got a nice little future. So we're hoping to go back down to Ocala next year at some point with a proper sanctioned meet. So things like that. We're growing for sure, and there's a lot of enthusiasm right now for steeplechase racing in America.
It's tremendous, Bill, and I do have to ask you. You mentioned I don't want to look too far ahead, but one thing that I heard you say that my ears perked up coming out of the summer when you said the chance of running at Aqueduct. When was the last time steeplechase racing was conducted at Aqueduct?
I'd have to look that up, but it's had to be in their 70s. I'm going to say the early 70s. I have to check that. That's a good question. I thought of it one day, and I went to look it up and got distracted somehow. But it's been quite a while. You probably know more about that than I do. But last year, as you recall, might recall, we raced on opening day at Belmont. We had those two races, the Enemann and the Lonesome Glory. Lonesome Glory is a key race for it. Both races are key, but that's a key race that kicks, you know, it's a prep, ends up being a prep race for Far Hills, you know, which is our championship day. And, both races feed into that, and it's, the spacing is perfect because we go in Saratoga, we got the Grade One Smithwick, and a month later we go, we have the Shepherd, and that, that leads right into the Lonesome Glory and then into the Grand National at Far Hills, so. But if they're not racing at Belmont and we're, and they shift over to Aqueduct, I would hope that we'd be a part of that program. And next time I talk to you, I'll get the answer to that question. But I'm going to guess somewhere around 1970. It was before I started in 1977. It was before that because I've never been to Aqueduct to see a jump race. So I'm going to say mid-70s, early to mid-70s. But we used to do a tremendous amount of jumping at Aqueduct.
But that'll be this fun. Well, Harry, we're going to have to call on Harry Rice, and this may actually require Sonny. We may need Sonny for this.
Sonny would know.
Because Sonny may have raised the flag. he may have been out there. He may have been out there being the flag man.
Sonny would know immediately. I could tell you that right now. But no, it'll be fun.
I'd love it. Well, because
I hope if that's the situation. I'm not quite sure what the situation is, though.
Well, I've got a print that I think I bought on eBay. It's not a print, actually. I take that back. It's a win photo. I can't get at it until I get back from Louisville in 2.5 weeks. But I've got a picture, a win picture, from a steeplechase race in the 30s at Aqueduct. And I want to say the stake was the Green Tree. Was the Green Tree a stake?
It probably was, yeah. It's just, yeah, that would make sense that it would be a stake. Back in the day, I mean,
it's got to be 36 or 37 that I've got.
Yeah. Well, there was a huge steeplechase program in New York in those days.
Well, and an outgrowth probably Sheepshead Bay and Jamaica and, you know, that whole, I mean, right? Because that's how...
Yeah.
All the roller coasters, right?
Yep.
Are where the steeplechase. That's
The
Sheepshead Bay.
No, we have a rich history of steeplechase racing in New York that changed rather dramatically in the early 70s. Once OTB opened up, you know, then things, you know, changed for the worse for us, but. And there was much less steeplechase racing. But anyway, we're still part of the history. The first year of Saratoga, there was a jump race. And we're still cooking along up there. So, but we've got a nice program. When you look at our spring schedule, and then it flows right into the summer now with the Colonial and Saratoga. And then the fall, we kind of bring it to a close in the fall with some really top-notch racing. So I'm very happy with the program that we have. And got a nice group of horsemen, got some young people, some new names, and, you know, Leslie Young, and some people I'm familiar with, and Carrie Brand, of course. And she put her name on the map, a former Shepherd assistant, had a phenomenal season last year. And then, of course, the Hall of Famer, Jack Fisher, who's, you know, dominated the game for the last decade. So got some real qualified people. They're bringing in some new owners. Both Leslie Young and Terry Breon have a lot of syndicates involved. So it's a lot of people. In fact, a lot of European people are dabbling in American steeplechasing now through syndications, and that's fun.
Well, and you know, it's funny. I'll probably I'll probably bring Sean Clancy tomorrow because I see that Sean and River D, they've got two in at Middleburg, and they've also got the horse that they're partnered up with Marshall Graham and Ten Strike running at Sean's got Saturday, and you know he seems to be expanding, you know, the River D operation. You mentioned what Carrie Breon's done, and you know she's put together, you know, not just the domestic partnerships, but you know she's trying to recruit out of out of Europe as well, and out of Ireland and so forth. I mean, there's a big demand. I mean, we need owners at every level in this game. Recruiting owners, and this is a different style, and it's a style of racing that we just absolutely love. And anybody that experiences it, it's infectious. It just
yep.
There's a certain gentility to it that just is so unique, and that's why we're constantly encouraging people to take part and experience it.
No, it's a nice option right now, and we've got some good young people and promoting it and talking about it and gathering up and finding those new owners. It's exciting. I mean, I look at an overnight now, and I'm seeing a lot of new names and a lot of syndicate names, and that's all good. The more, the merrier. And Sean's particularly good at it with his River D operation.
Cool.
You going to make it out to Iroquois? He always bugs you about going out to Iroquois. This would be the year to come.
Well, Bill, I invite everybody to visit the revised and freshened